You might be standing there in the dark right now, or maybe you're just looking at that silent, black screen of a dead router, and realizing how much we rely on a steady hum of electricity to keep our modern lives moving. It is a helpless feeling when the grid drops out and takes your connection to the outside world with it. I have spent many nights sitting in that same silence, listening to the wind outside, and wondering if the food in the fridge is going to make it until morning. But over the years, I have learned that you do not need a massive diesel-chugging industrial generator to keep the things that actually matter running. We are going to talk about how you can build a bridge between a total blackout and staying connected, focusing on the small, essential devices that keep your home functional. It is about understanding the difference between wanting everything on and needing the right things on. Before we even touch a battery or a cable, we have to look at what we are actually trying to save. When the lights go out, your brain probably jumps to the big stuff. But I want you to think about the small draws. I am talking about your internet router, your phone chargers, and maybe a single lamp so you aren't tripping over the cat. Most people make the mistake of thinking they need to power the whole house. But that's where the cost and the complexity get out of hand. If you can keep your internet alive, you have information. And if you have information, you have a plan. We are looking for a solution that is quiet, safe to keep inside your living room, and simple enough that you can set it up while you are still rubbing the sleep out of your eyes. I remember one winter, about 5 years ago, when a transformation took out a line 3 miles up the road. I had just bought this fancy, high-capacity battery backup, what they call a UPS, or uninterruptible power supply. I was so proud of it that I plugged everything into it. I had the router, the modem, my desktop computer, 2 monitors, and even a little space heater tucked under the desk. When the power popped off, that battery kicked in with a confident beep, and I felt like a genius for about 8 minutes. Then, the whole thing just died. I had overloaded the circuit and drained the cell because I didn't respect the math of the draw. I was trying to run a marathon on a single breath of air. That taught me that backing up power isn't just about having a big battery. It is about being disciplined with what you plug into it. Now, I keep my essential communication gear on one dedicated line and leave the heavy lifting for another day. To get started with this, you really need to understand what you are holding. We are usually looking at 2 main options for the average homeowner. There is the UPS I mentioned, which is basically a smart battery that sits between your wall outlet and your device. It stays plugged in all the time, and the second it senses the voltage from the street drop, it flips an internal switch faster than a human can blink. Then, there are portable power stations, which are basically giant versions of the power bank you use for your phone. These are great because you can move them from the office to the kitchen as needed. When you pick one up, you will notice it has a bit of heft to it. That weight is the lead or lithium stored inside, and you want to feel a solid, rugged casing that won't crack if it gets bumped in the dark. Once you have your power source ready, the first thing we do is identify the lifeline of the house, which is almost always the router and the modem. I like to keep these on a dedicated UPS, because it means the Wi-Fi never even flutters when the storm hits. You'll find the power bricks for these devices usually tucked behind a desk or a couch. When you plug them into the back of your battery backup, make sure you are using the outlets labeled for battery power. A lot of these units have some outlets that are just for surge protection, meaning they won't stay on when the grid goes down. You want to feel that satisfying click as the plug seats firmly into the socket. If it feels loose or wiggly, that is a sign of a poor connection that could heat up or fail when you need it most. After the internet is secured, we move to your mobile devices. In a long-term outage, your phone is your flashlight, your map, and your radio. I always suggest having a high-quality multi-port charger ready to go. Instead of hunting for individual blocks, we use one central hub. When you connect this to your portable power station, you want to see the display on the station light up. Most modern stations have a little screen that tells you exactly how many watts are being pulled out. It is a bit like watching a fuel gauge on a car. If you see that number jumping too high, you know you need to unplug something. You are looking for a steady, low draw that tells you the battery is going to last for hours or even days rather than minutes. As we are setting this up, you might be thinking about how long this will actually last. That is where the calculation comes in, but we do it by feel and observation. If you notice your battery backup is starting to emit a steady, high-pitched alarm, that is its way of telling you it is under stress or running low. I always keep a simple LED lamp nearby, one that pulls almost no power. Plugging that in gives you a visual cue. If the light is steady, your power is clean. If you see it flickering, or if the battery unit is getting warm to the touch, you are pushing the limits. I always run my hand over the side of the casing. It should feel room temperature. If it starts feeling like a warm cup of coffee, you have too many devices fighting for a drink from that same well. Now we have to talk about the physical placement of these backups. Batteries don't like to be buried in the back of a dusty closet where they can't breathe. They need a little bit of airflow around them to stay cool. I keep mine on a hard surface, never on a thick carpet that can trap heat. When you are positioning your portable station, make sure the vents are clear. You might hear a small fan kick on inside the unit when it starts working hard. That whirring sound is a good thing. It means the internal brain is keeping the cells cool so they don't degrade. If you hear that fan struggling or grinding, it is time to blow out the dust with some compressed air. While we are working through the house, we also need to consider the cables. In a blackout, cables become trip hazards. I like to use Velcro ties to keep everything snug against the furniture. You don't want to be the person who survives the storm only to get taken down by a stray Ethernet cord in the hallway. When you are routing these wires, avoid sharp bends. A wire is like a garden hose. If you kink it too hard, you are putting stress on the copper inside. You want smooth, natural curves. When you run your fingers down the length of the cord, it should feel smooth and uniform, without any lumps or frayed spots in the insulation. Eventually, the power is going to come back on. You will know, because the microwave in the kitchen will probably beep, and the streetlights will flicker back to life. But don't just rip everything out of your backup systems immediately. The grid is often unstable for the first few minutes after it returns. I usually wait about 10 or 15 minutes to make sure the voltage has stabilized. You might hear your UPS clicking back and forth during this time. That is the internal regulator protecting your gear from dirty power or spikes that often follow a repair. Once everything feels calm, you can transition back to the wall outlets. Taking care of these batteries is a year-round job, not just a storm day job. About every 6 months, I like to do a dry run. I'll unplug the main power and see how long my devices actually run. It gives me a sense of the health of the battery. If it used to last 4 hours, and now it only lasts 2, I know it is time to look for a replacement cell. You can usually smell a failing battery before you see it. It has a sharp, slightly acidic scent that tells you the chemicals inside are starting to break down. If you catch that, it is time to move the unit to the garage and get a new one. Setting this up properly gives you a sense of quiet confidence. When you hear the thunder rolling in or you see the lights flicker, you won't have that moment of panic. You'll know that your router is tucked away safely on its own power source and your phones are topped off. You have turned a potential emergency into a minor inconvenience. It is the hallmark of a good DIYer to not just fix things when they break, but to build systems that prevent the break from mattering in the first place. You've taken control of your environment, and that is a much better way to sit through a storm. Once you have your connections verified and your stations charged, take one last look at your setup. Everything should be tucked away, labeled if you have a lot of similar cords, and easily accessible. You should be able to reach your power button in total darkness just by muscle memory. That familiarity is what bridges the gap between a tool and a solution. You are no longer just a bystander to the weather or the local utility company's problems. You are the person with the plan, the person who stays connected, and the person who can lend a charging port to a neighbor if they need it. That is what being a mentor in your own home is all about. I find that the more you practice this kind of preparedness, the more it changes how you look at every other system in your house. You start seeing the flow of energy, the vulnerabilities, and the simple ways to shore them up. It is a grounded, practical way to live. So, next time the sky turns that bruised shade of purple and the wind starts to pick up, you can just sit back, listen to the rain on the roof, and know that you are ready. You have the torque to handle the heavy lifting and the tape to keep the small things together. And in the end, that is all you really need to get through to the other side.